Welcome to IDD Get to Know Me Special Olympics Edition. I'm your co-host, Victor.
And I'm your co-host, Melanie.
In this edition of the podcast, we will be diving into some of the topics important to the Special Olympics community.
Before we start, let's explain what IDD means.
Great idea. IDD stands for Intellectual and or Developmental Disabilities. You will hear from us, people with IDD, and experts on specific health topics.
So today, we are focusing on diabetes and what we can do to stay healthy Special Olympics athletes. Today, I'm excited to have Megan Lloyd with us. Please introduce yourself and share with us what your favorite current hobby is.
Hi, thank you for having me. My name is Megan Lloyd, and I am a professor at Ontario Tech University in Oshawa. Right now, my current hobby is curling, actually. I curl at the Oshawa Curling Club two nights a week. And I love it because it really challenges me, but it's also really social. So I get to meet people in my community and also play a sport and try and get better at my sport and to learn new things every time I go out.
That sounds wonderful. And what I really love is that you seem to be someone who's got way better balance / coordination than me. So kudos on the curling.
Oh, thank you. It's a hard sport. People don't think it is, but it is.
So today's topic is all about diabetes. So maybe you could start by explaining to us what exactly diabetes is and why it might be hard for some people if they do indeed get it.
That's a good question. So diabetes, is a condition where someone's blood sugar is too high. So when we eat and the food gets digested, it is converted eventually through all the different processes to use that sugar in the food in helping to run our bodies. So the blood sugar elevates. Now, in somebody who's does not have diabetes, the pancreas produces enough insulin to normalize out the blood sugar. But in some people, blood sugar stays high. The body either does not produce enough insulin or the body isn't using the insulin the right way. And we're primarily today going to talk about what's called type 2 diabetes. And that means that people's blood sugar is high a lot and they need some help to get their blood sugar to come back into normal ranges. And there's different ways that you can bring your blood sugar back down. Some people have insulin. Some people take medication by mouth, by like a pill. And some people are able to manage it with being very, very careful with what they eat and how much physical activity or exercise that they get.
I have some friends in my own networks who do indeed have diabetes and who have to, like you're saying, check their blood sugar very often. And some of them have to prick themselves like with a needle or other ways. And I have to say that while I myself am not diabetic, I have to say that I find my fellow athletes quite brave because I really hate needles. Like I really hate needles very badly.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who don't like needles. And that's one of the reasons why it's important to try to keep your blood sugar, you know, in a healthy range.
I know you recently did a research study looking at diabetes for people who are involved in Special Olympics, and also people who aren't. Can you please tell us about the study and what your findings are?
Thanks for asking that question. So, what my colleagues and I did is we found out who participated in Special Olympics in the province of Ontario, and we compared them to other people who also have a developmental disability in the province of Ontario, and we compared them to each other on diabetes. They were all adults. They started at between the ages of 30 and 39, and then what we were able to do is follow them for 20 years. And what we found was that the people who participate in Special Olympics, who have an intellectual or developmental disability, develop diabetes less often than the people in Ontario with an intellectual or developmental disability who did not participate in Special Olympics. So this is interesting news because Special Olympics is a place where people participate in physical activity, sport, they compete, they go to practices, and tournaments, and they do this both at sort of in their neighborhood, but some people like yourself compete at a higher level. So this was really interesting because we think that participating in Special Olympics is good for your health, and it appears to have a positive influence on whether or not people get diabetes.
Thank you for sharing that insight, Megan, and I can definitely confirm how much of a positive movement Special Olympics is. I really enjoy Special Olympics a lot. It's a great place for myself and fellow athletes. It really is.
I believe you, and I think that it's true. I think that participating in Special Olympics is good for your health, both your mental health, like how you feel about yourself and how much energy you have and how much you enjoy being out with your friends, but also our study was showing that there's some physical health benefits of participating in Special Olympics as well. The research on just about everybody shows that physical activity is good for us. Specifically to diabetes, physical activity has been shown to help reduce blood sugar levels. And so engaging in regular physical activity, such as Special Olympics, whether it be a dance class or an aerobics class or at the gym or at your pool at your apartment, these are all ways that physical activity is beneficial for diabetes.
And that sort of touches into the next question, and you've already started answering it a little bit. Why do you think physical activity is important for preventing diabetes?
Well, when we exercise or we engage in physical activity, we burn more blood sugar. We burn more calories. And that's a good thing if your blood sugar is a little bit high. It's also good for people who don't have high blood sugar. But if you are struggling to have healthy blood sugar, the physical activity helps to reduce the blood sugar, which is a good thing in this case.
So, in your research, have you found any other factors that we would need to keep in mind when trying to not get diabetes and stay healthy?
That's a really good question as well. So, one of the other really important parts to not getting diabetes is eating healthy as much as you can. So, as a Special Olympics athlete, things like, you're at practice or you're at a game or a competition, you could choose to drink just water as opposed to a juice or a high sugar sport drink, you know, some of those high sugar drinks. If you choose water, that's a healthier choice. And also things like our snacks. Maybe we choose like actual whole fruit as opposed to like a candy bar, or even some of those granola bars are actually quite high in sugar. So trying to think about healthy choices whenever we can. Sometimes there's not a lot of choice, but sometimes we can choose to try to have a healthier option. So maybe we don't put extra cream and extra sugar and extra whipped cream on our coffee. We just have a little bit of sugar and a little bit of milk in our coffee. Like small changes can actually make a big difference for the health of Special Olympics athletes.
Definitely, for sure. I really agree with you on that, Megan. It doesn't have to be like a big, massive change. You know, like you take baby steps at first, and then the further you take the baby steps, the bigger you'll learn to grow. As they say in Special Olympics, or as we all know, as I say, slow and steady wins the race. So.
You're absolutely right, Melanie.
And in fact, some athletes already have diabetes. So why would sport be especially important for them as well?
Yeah, so for athletes who already have diabetes, being active in sport can help keep their blood sugars in a healthy range. We have to be aware of any athletes on our teams that do have diabetes to just make sure that they aren't going too low. But in general, physical activity and sport can help, in addition to medicine, keep blood sugar at a healthy level.
Thank you for that answer. Thank you. And something that's really, really big for me as an advocate is accessibility. So we're going to touch a little bit on accessibility. As we know, accessibility is a really big part of Special Olympics. So as researchers, what are some ideas that come to mind when you think about making physical activity accessible for athletes?
You know, that's a really good question, and it's a really complex question. It's hard to answer, but I have a few ideas. So, like you said, transportation is a big factor. So, is the practice or the team home close to a bus line? That's a very big problem or something to consider. But what about places that don't have regular buses? Like you live in Ottawa and there's lots of buses in Ottawa. What if you lived somewhere smaller and there weren't as many buses? So that becomes a problem. I don't know if I have a perfect answer for that, but I think what we need to do is ask the athletes, ask the coaches, ask the people in the area. Where is the best place for Special Olympics to hold their programs? The best place for people to be able to get to the Special Olympics programs. So that's one thing. Asking people directly, they could probably come up with some really good ideas. Other ways to make it more accessible is to possibly have more programs so that people don't have to travel as far to get to their sport. But that's not always the best solution, because if there's not that many people in the area where you live, you're not going to be able to have every team in the entire Special Olympics plan. But what you could do is ask the athletes, which sports do you want in this area? And then you would run those sports. I think things like cost are also a factor for some people. Does the equipment cost money? Do I have a bus pass or not? Do I have a family member who can drive me or not? Do I have to travel with my team for big competitions? So money also plays a factor. But I think that as a community, the researchers, the people who work at Special Olympics, the people who volunteer at Special Olympics, and the athletes themselves, I think we can work together to come up with some really good solutions and do more.
I know we already touched on a few factors like budget and accessibility for transportation, but yes, how can we make it easier for everyone to be a part of?
You know, one of the things that I think about a lot in my research is how do we give people who have disabilities the skills that they need to be in Special Olympics when they get older? So Special Olympics has some really great programs for young athletes, for children, and also their high school programs in Ontario. And then, of course, their adult programs, young adult and older adults as well. But I think things like physical and health education are really important, and that all people with disabilities should be fully included and taught physical and health education in schools. I also feel very strongly that kids with disabilities also need to be taught how to throw, how to catch, how to kick, how to run, and giving all our athletes that core foundation is going to increase their chances of being successful in Special Olympics.
So, okay, now as we're starting to wrap up, I would absolutely love to hear your advice for our listeners. What is one piece of advice you would give to athletes, coaches, or really any family caregivers to help them stay healthy and support the health of other athletes?
Well, I think that small changes, small patterns of behavior, nobody needs to go from sitting there watching TV to running a marathon the next day. Let's make small changes both in our food and in our physical activity. And it doesn't necessarily need to be joining a team that's competitive. It could just be going for a walk with your family in the evenings, if it's warm enough, or going to the local community center and going for a walk there. I think something we haven't talked about on the recording yet that is kind of special is that Melanie and I knew each other about almost 15 or 16, 17 years ago. Melanie was one of my athletes when I coached Special Olympics soccer. She was our goalie extraordinaire. So I think finding your community, finding your friends, finding the people who will motivate you. Sometimes you don't feel like going to practice, but when you know your friends are there and your coaches and the other people who are there to support you, you might be more motivated to actually go. So for the family members, I think it's important to ask, what does your family member with a disability want to participate in? And then to try and find out how to make that happen. And I think there's lots of options and that everyone benefits, both the family and the athletes, when they participate in Special Olympics.
Yes, and I think as you were just recalling there, my soccer years, I thought I also remembered a coach somewhere down the line saying, You know, just work on being 1% better every day. Just something as minimal as that.
Absolutely.
I don't recall the coach's name at the moment, but there was one coach who I remember hearing just 1% every day. So yes, little baby steps can make a big difference.
Absolutely. You're right.
Well, thank you so much, Megan, for sharing your valuable insights today. I am really grateful for the opportunity we've shared together. Thank you so much for taking the time today. It's really been an honor and pleasure for me.
Oh, honestly, the honor is all mine, Melanie, to see how skilled you are as an interviewer and a podcaster and as an athlete. I think it's just incredible. And I'm so glad to touch base with you again so many years later.
Well, thank you very, very, very much. This Special Olympics edition of the podcast has been made possible through support from Special Olympics Canada and the Azrieli Adult Neurodevelopmental Center at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health in Toronto, Canada.